Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally for the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Never give up. A caregiver's PTSD success story. That's post-traumatic stress disorder, for those of you who didn't know. Tanya and Rick Shaw, United States Marine Corps. How this amazing woman saved her family and her marriage. So please stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show, folks. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Well, okay, that's three. Oh, yeah, and they are also prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, please learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you do not put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing, another thing, called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process. You can't go around it. You can't go up, down, under it. You got to go through it. So hopefully we can help you get through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show, and my radio podcast, and my books, and my videos, and my blog. I know, it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not really. It's all about you. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. Or the shortcut, just DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S, DaveNass.com. And the first four letters of my last name, I'll pronounce that, Nancy Apple Sam Sam, DaveNass.com. Now, when you go to my website, you'll want to take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's about my amazing wife's story. Okay, and mine too, because I'm kind of interwoven in there as well. Still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz. And it'll also assess where you are in the burnout process. And the best part is, you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Amazon is still selling this book for almost $10, so it's a great value. Now, I want to take this moment to thank my guest last week, director of the Families and Healthcare Project at the United Hospital Fund, Carol Levine. She was discussing why caregivers find it so stressful dealing with healthcare providers and agencies. Now, you can listen to this anytime, 7 days a week, 24/7, as you can all of my podcasts, including the one we're doing today. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guests now, Tanya and Rick. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all of the introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
How far are you there?
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're here. Thanks for having us.
And you're sharing a phone line. That's good. Tanya and Rick, thanks again for allowing me to interview you today. I really appreciate it. Why don't we start with you, Tanya? We have a lot of ground to cover, so let's get right into this. Why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself? Just who is Tanya Shaw? I mean, you know, before you got married, you know, how did you guys meet? You know, all of this stuff. Don't leave anything out.
First, I want to thank you, Dave, for having us. This has been a crazy ride, so thank you for allowing us to share it on your show. I'm Tanya Shaw. I'm the mother of a 13-year-old daughter, wife of a Marine veteran, and a proud supporter for PTSD awareness and education. Rick and I first met in 2006 through a mutual friend while I was in Jacksonville, North Carolina, where he was stationed at.
So, Tanya, how did you first learn about post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, I knew Rick had the diagnosis of PTSD, but I had no idea what it was. No, there were groups that talked about PTSD at the time he was diagnosed. I started doing my own research on how it affects people and found a lot about that, but I had nobody to turn to or talk to about how it was impacting our relationship. It was really a trial and error learning experience to see what worked and what didn't.
Tanya, I'm sure that one of your frustrations with Rick was getting him to communicate with you. What do you say to those spouses of PTSD who ask, "My spouse won't communicate with me. What should I do?" How about when they say, "I feel like my spouse doesn't love me anymore." Do they?
Rick didn't want to talk for a while. Anytime I would bring it up, he would completely shut down on me. Sometimes you have to allow them their own space. Don't try to force them to tell you how they feel or make them feel pressured to talk. It's not easy, but that was a lesson I had to learn the hard way. During these times, they can say extremely hurtful things. Rick will tell you he has said some of the most hurtful things to me for no reason at all. PTSD is a mental disorder, and sometimes it is not them talking, it's the PTSD. If they are saying things to you that they normally wouldn't have said in the past, as hard as it is, you have to understand that it is not their heart talking, it's their mind. The things that Rick would say, I knew that was not the person that I married talking to me.
What kind of things did you have to do when Rick was in his darkest state?
Well, it got really bad. I would always go to all of his doctor's appointments with him because he would forget things. He wouldn't remember taking our daughter to school one day, so I knew I needed to step in and do something. I was there to settle him when he would wake up in sweat and screaming from nightmares at night. When he would get up and start to sleepwalk, I would follow him around the house without waking him up to make sure he didn't hurt himself. And after doing my research, I know that you're not supposed to wake someone from sleepwalking. You're just supposed to follow them around and, you know, make sure they don't hurt themselves or anyone. But most importantly, at least I believe, was I would listen when he was ready to talk without judging or interrupting. This started with short sentences about the past, but gradually he felt comfortable enough to talk more and more and even let his emotions out. When he wasn't afraid to talk and cry to me, I knew he fully trusted me.
Hey, you know, I've also heard, I think everybody's heard, you shouldn't wake up a sleepwalker, but do we know why you shouldn't wake up a sleepwalker? What happened if you do?
Well, Dave, if you don't mind if I jump in.
No, go ahead.
When you're actually in the process of sleepwalking, as soon as you're awakened, sometimes your response will be possibly what's going through your mind. You're actually kind of in a not in a state of reality, and so the actions that you do, you know, are not the actions that would have normally come had you been awake. And so by waking them up from that sleep, they can actually do things that could harm somebody. They recommend not to wake anybody up if they are sleepwalking. Just kind of follow them around and make sure that they don't do anything. One of the big things I was bad about was going to the refrigerator in the middle of the night and eating. And to be honest, I didn't really remember any of this, and I didn't believe Tanya. She finally ended up recording me, and that's how I started kind of accepting that there was something going on. But I would also walk around, pace the house with my pistol. I would
wake up. While you're sleepwalking?
I would kind of just pace the foot of my bed with my pistol, like I was on guard. I would kind of relive some of the mortar fire coming in or the attacks on the base. And there were times that I would try to pull everybody, like pull Tanya off the bed, or I would try to get our daughter out of bed and get them to a safe place, even though we were living on base at the time. She would have to finally kind of calm me down and show me that there was everything, life was normal outside of our door. But in my mind, I was back in a war zone. And so especially while I was pacing with my pistol, she would just kind of watch to make sure. The doctors also recommended, since I was getting in the refrigerator, I gained about 55 pounds because I was eating in the middle of the night. But they were worried that I might get underneath the kitchen sink or, you know, get into chemicals and things like that in the house and consume those in my sleep. And that was why they recommend just kind of following them around but not waking them up.
Well, I guess this really affected both of your daytime waking hours, since you were kind of sleep deprived. I assume when you're sleepwalking, that doesn't count as sleeping, as for rest, right?
Right, and I actually have some sleep studies done, and I would stage 2 sleep. Mm-hmm. I would never really make it into REM or the real actual relaxing sleep, and where you would get the most recovery. And the biggest problem with that was I had horrible insomnia. For the longest time, I stared at my ceiling. I could memorize the pattern on my ceiling. I hated my ceiling. Mm-hmm. I literally had that feeling of hate towards my ceiling when I went to bed. And so to get sleep, I was prescribed multiple different kinds of medications, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. Of the medications that they would prescribe me were sedatives that would put me way out to where I was completely gone to the world. But even taking that medication during the sleep studies, I wasn't really getting restful sleep.
Now, when you're sleepwalking, your eyes are open, right? Because you obviously you got to see where you're going, or your eyes closed, or, I mean, how's that work?
You know, to be honest, I really don't know. She would take video from kind of behind. I know that she had taken videos while I was snoring and jumping in my sleep, and my eyes would be partially opened. There were times they'd be closed. So it really depended on the night, but I don't have any video of my eyes being open while I was walking around, so I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
So what do you remember, Rick, during what Tanya calls your darkest hours? What do you remember about those times? Do you remember shutting down, not communicating with her? Do you remember, would you have any memory, I think you said no, of your sleepwalking, and when she mentioned it to you, she had to record it in order for you to believe it? What do you remember from those dark times?
I remember there's a lot of it that still I've kind of shut out. I remember feeling like everybody knew something was wrong with me, but I was trying to hide it. I remember feeling just exhausted, but I still had a job to do. In the military, especially the Marine Corps, if you have any kind of illness or any kind of problem going on with you, it's considered a weakness, so you do everything you can to hide it. So we hide our weaknesses, so I would mask it. I would go to work, and then I would come home, and I would be extremely just hateful and rude. Just say some of the things to her that I still to this day, you know, have this deep pain inside, knowing that I said these things wasn't necessarily me. It was kind of, she was that person that I had grown to trust, and they just kind of came out to her because she was the person that was around. To be honest, I think is why I was.
Yeah.
I don't in no way justifying it or anything like that, but that's really the only conclusion I've been able to come up with, is that I was comfortable with her to let her see my flaws, even though it,
yeah, there's an old song by the Mills Brothers called "You Only Hurt the Ones You Love, the Ones You Shouldn't Hurt at All." And as a caregiver, caregivers do get the brunt of their loved ones, harsh treatment, simply because they're the only ones around who can receive that.
Right.
Do you remember not communicating with her, or is that totally oblivious to you?
No, I remember making it a point to try not to communicate with her, because it seemed whenever I did, it was all negative. And so I would also shut my family off. I didn't talk to my mom for probably almost 2 years. My best friend actually joined the Marine Corps with me, and I didn't talk to him for almost 9 years. We actually just reconnected for the first time about a month ago, and a lot of it is due to Tanya being there and listening and allowing me to get more comfortable speaking and realizing that it's okay. And so I was extremely pleased to reconnect with my best friend before we joined the Marine Corps, and him be there to accept it and us kind of move forward from where we are. So that's been a huge success in itself.
Wow. So did your friend have this disorder as well, or how many other Marines do you know of that have this?
While I was in, I didn't know of anybody that was battling with it. But since I have created the Facebook page and we've kind of gone on there and opened up about it, there have been a couple of the guys that I served with that have sent me a message and said, you know, man, I'm dealing with the same stuff, and I have been, and you know, I'm glad you came out and said something, because now I know, you know, they still don't want to necessarily come out and talk about it openly to other people, but they feel comfortable knowing that they know me, I understand what they're going through, and they'll come to me and talk. As far as my friend, he didn't necessarily get anything from combat. He's he's actually still active duty. He's a warrant officer over one of the fire departments, the Crash Fire and Rescue here in North Carolina on one of the Marine bases. Mm-hmm. And he told me about situations he's been through and how they bother him. And so even though he's still active now, he's actually able to open up to me, even though in his position as a warrant officer, he can't, you know, show that weakness, especially to his troops. So it's kind of a safe haven for him to come to me and discuss it as well now.
Yeah, and I want to apologize to Tanya. I think I accused you of being from South Carolina and not North Carolina. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I'm sure those two states have some rivalry going on between each other.
a little bit.
So was there any kind of intervention? It sounds like you were in denial about your problem, and similar to a drug addict, you know, did the whole family kind of get together and say, we got to do something, and like put you in a room with all your loved ones and one by one? How did they get you to the point where you took your first step and said, okay, I have a problem, I'm powerless over this problem, whatever? And Tanya, chime in anytime you want.
Tanya was there to always listen whenever I would want to talk. But I didn't want to admit or really seek any help until I got to the point I was planning out my suicide. I had it planned out, and it was while I was thinking of these things that it all kind of hit me at one moment. Like, how have you allowed yourself to go from this outgoing, fun, go with the flow, enjoy everything person to, you know, having the stuff ready and the plan to end it all? And so she was always there supporting me. I never really discussed any of what I had planned with her, obviously, I didn't want her to know that that was my intentions. Mm-hmm. But at that moment, realizing that I would leave my wife, my daughter, my mom, all these people over something that I had no control over was really kind of the point that it all came crashing down when I went to Tanya and I realized that I knew I couldn't handle this on my own any longer.
Yeah,
so
it was a tough battle to go through. It really was.
You just kind of were planning your suicide and then to ask for help? Is that kind of how it happened?
It was. And the biggest thing was I was fortunate enough to have Tanya there where I knew that I could go to her and tell her what I was going to do, and I could break down and I could let everything out, all the emotions of how I had allowed something to control me, and she was there for me to listen afterwards.
Wow.
And the fact that I had somebody that I was comfortable enough to go talk to once I got to that point was kind of my intervention. That was my saving grace, was her showing that support prior, even though I was not literally, but I was spitting in her face, resenting her, but she was there. I knew I could go to her when I hit that point.
We are up on our break. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
We are back with Rick and Tanya Shaw, who are into helping people who are struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder. Tanya, I wanted to ask you, what are the biggest misconceptions about PTSD? And just share with, you know, what was your first initial interpretations of what it was? And just kind of talk from your heart.
Well, Dave, honestly, the biggest hurdle was the point when Rick left me for 6 months. We had been together for so long, and I honestly thought that day would never come, but when he just up and left me, I was devastated. Like, I felt like my world had just come crashing down, and I was devastated. I mean, not only did he break my heart into a million pieces, but he also broke our daughter's heart into a million pieces. I mean, it just hurt really bad. I mean, I can't stress that enough. I wanted to believe he meant what he said, and he was sorry. You know, he allowed something like that to control him.
it was not easy at all. I mean, I not only made my vows to him, you know, I meant them. Yeah. I meant every word I said, you know, when I did take my vows to him, I knew I wanted to save my marriage, though. So I knew that I had to fight for my marriage. I knew that I just couldn't walk away from him. I knew something was wrong. I knew that, you know, even though he left me for those 6 months, I would always call him. I would always go up to his work and check on him. And it was rough. But at the same time, I knew that I wanted to save my marriage. So I didn't quit. I kept fighting.
How long did you put up with the symptoms?
Well, he was going through this silently for 7 years.
Wow. Did you know that when it was happening? Or was he covering it up pretty good? Or was he doing a bad job of covering it up?
Well, it started out when he would sleepwalk, and I was wondering why he was doing that. And then his blood pressure started going really high then. He would pace the bed with his pistol. He was angry all the time. He would just say hurtful things to me. And I knew that that was not the man that I married. You know, I knew that was the man that I married that was talking to me. I knew something wasn't right.
I really feel for you. How old was your daughter when he left for six months?
She was 11 years old. She was
11. Oh, that's a tough age.
It was.
So, Rick, what was going on in your mind when you left her? What was your reasoning in your mind? What were you thinking?
The biggest thing that was going through my mind was I was realizing that I was kind of out of control almost. I knew that I never got physically abusive, but I started noticing that I was getting more and more verbally abusive. My temper was extremely short. I would go outside and I would just drink all day. I would hide the drinking, and I would come in, pass out. A lot of it, I couldn't sleep, and so I figured if I could drink enough to pass out, I would get a little bit of sleep. But in between the coming from outside and going to pass out, the things I would say were horrible, and I got to where I was ashamed of myself, and I thought that I was more of a burden than anything else. So I figured the best thing to do in my mind at that state was to leave. And I really, to be honest, did it in the worst of ways, because it, as horrible as this sounds, I told her I was going to Subway. Did she want anything? And I got my truck and I left.
Wow.
And then when she was at work, I came home and I grabbed some of my stuff, and that was all I took. And it was just a something in my mind was convincing me that I was too much of a burden, and I would be better off away from them. I just, all we did was argue. All we did was, you know, all I did was drink, and go to sleep, and go to work. And so I just felt that I was better not here.
So you were, in your own way, you were trying to protect her, sounds like.
I think it was more of a defense on my own. It was, instead of facing it, I was running from it.
So what was life like in your apartment for 6 months while you were away? You were still drinking. You were still sleepwalking. Do you know what was going on? No one was watching over you, I assume. You were alone.
I was still drinking excessively, even more, and just kind of, I don't know, just trying to drink all I could. As bad as this is, I even started seeing somebody else that didn't know me from the past. I could kind of be myself, and myself wasn't really myself. And no matter how hard I tried to turn into convince myself that nothing was wrong, I still was going through all of the problems that I was going through, and realized that I couldn't handle them anymore, and that's whenever I was ready to end it, and she was right there to allow me to come back, and that's kind of what she was alluding to with her biggest hurdle was all the things I put her through before and all the things that she went through while I was gone, because I blocked her phone number. She would show up at my work to try to talk to me, and I did everything I could to push everybody away except for the people that didn't know me in the, you know, after all of this. I pushed everyone that knew who I really was away, but she would still come check on me. And so by her, when she said overcoming her biggest hurdle, accepting the fact that what I had done, not only in the past, but after I left and while I left, and being able to forgive me, was something that I still can't put into words how indebted I am that she stuck with me.
She took her vows seriously. Wow, she's a keeper. Hang on to her, Rick.
And I will.
Tanya, you were going to say something. I interrupted you. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, within those 6 months, like I was telling you, I mean, it was just heartbreaking, and I mean, I just thought that my whole world had just ended. I mean, it took me a few months to even just, I mean, when I, like you said, whenever he would block my number, I would call him, and I would get, you know, I'd go straight to his voicemail, and that was devastating because I was just, you know, wanting to see how he was doing. So I would have to go up to his work, and when I would go up to his work, he really didn't have too much to say to me, but at the same time, I still didn't give up, even though he tried to get me to sign separation papers 3 or 4 times. He even was pushing the divorce. I mean, we were separated for those 6 months, and we didn't have but 6 more to go before, you know, we could have got our divorce. But somehow, some way, you know, it completely turned itself around. I mean, I quit texting, I quit calling, you know, I gave him that space, you know, I quit doing these things for 2 weeks because I knew that the more I would do it, the more he would feel like he just felt closed in. So I just quit doing it for 2 weeks. And then when I stopped calling and texting him, he finally picked up the phone to call to see how I was doing. And so that actually made me happy to see that he was calling and texting me to see what I was doing and how I was, you know, feeling and everything.
Yeah. Tanya, I want you to imagine someone else going through what you were going through. And maybe they don't have the determination or the whatever it is you have that made you not give up. How would you encourage other wives who just have no hope? They've given up hope. They're just going to sign the divorce papers because they just don't know what else to do. What would you tell them to change their mind and give them just a ray of sunshine of hope? Can you think of that?
Yes, actually, Dave, what I would recommend for someone that just don't know what to do, if they've, you know, called their spouse, they've texted their spouse, or they've tried everything they know to do, give them that little bit of space. Sometimes they need that little bit of space because, like I said with Rick, I gave him 2 weeks. And within that two weeks, that made him think about me. That made him, you know, see that, you know, he was wondering what I was doing and how I was feeling, so that made him call to check on me. So that actually made me feel like he did actually care instead of the way I was feeling, because I didn't think that he did care. And the biggest thing that I can say is I followed what my heart said. My head was telling me to just leave him, just let it be, but my heart was telling me, no, you can't do this. You have to fight for your marriage. You took these vows. And so I went with what my heart said, and I can honestly say today we're in a whole lot better place than we were before. And, I mean, I'm a strong believer in following with what your heart says, too.
Wow. That's so moving. Rick, any comments on what she just said?
I can in no way, like I said, justify anything, but I know that in my state of mind at that point, I really felt like I was pushing her away, and the more I would push her away, the more she would continue to call, and it would irritate me at that point. Mm. And when she finally got to the point where she said, fine, I'm going to back off, I had that time in my mind. I was able to reflect on all that she had done without getting upset because she was, in my opinion, at that point in my mind, I felt like she was pestering me. She wasn't checking on me. She was pestering me.
Mm.
Not literally, but that was the way I interpreted it. And so having that space when she wasn't calling allowed me that time to reflect on all that she had been through, all she had stuck through, and how she was still trying to help me out, even with other medical conditions that I had and had going on. She was still there. And so it allowed me that time to realize that, okay, she is really, truly there to support me. And that was kind of the turning point that
wow.
made me open my eyes and realize that I didn't have a nagging wife. I had a loving, caring wife.
So, you know, it's kind of a bad example, but the visual that I'm getting as you told that story is about cats. You know, I'm not a cat lover at all. I try to stay away from cats, and other people who love cats, I've observed that when someone is trying to pet a cat or trying to pick up a cat, they just run away. And when someone like me doesn't give a rip about cats, it's like they're up on me and they're going around my feet and they won't leave me alone. And it's almost kind of like that. You ignore a cat, they'll come to you. You go after a cat, they'll stay away. Bad example, but it's the first thing I thought of.
that's exactly, I mean, that's a good, good analogy. It really is.
Well, listen, we're up on another break. Let's take a break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books, starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back with Rick and Tanya Shaw talking about post-traumatic stress disorder and the devastating effects that it can destroy a marriage, destroy a family, destroy an individual. Rick was contemplating suicide when he came to his senses and he came back and asked for help. Tanya, you've mentioned a whole bunch of stuff. Out of all of the stuff that you've mentioned, what was the biggest hurdle to overcome? What was the absolute worst part of it all?
I would say the biggest thing for me was adjusting to when he came back, because I was wondering if, you know, if he's ever going to leave me again, you know, are you just going to come back for, you know, a day, a month, right, a year? I mean, are you going to leave me again? And I was trying to explain to him how bad he hurt, you know, me and his daughter. And it was just really hard to overcome that, because I just, every time he would leave, I'm like, well, are you coming back? Are you, you say you're going to Subway or you're going here or you're going there. Are you coming back? I mean,
yeah. Trust issues. It takes years to build up trust and 5 seconds to destroy it. Yeah. And forgiveness.
It sure does.
That's a tough one. So, Rich, what did you understand the trust issues that you had broken with her? I mean, was it clear to you, or were you offended by her not trusting you? What was going on in your mind?
When I came back, I have absolutely not been offended. She has no reason to not feel that way. And so I knew it was at that point, it was my responsibility not to expect it to be better overnight, but to show her every day that we could build it up. And I know that this is still an ongoing process. And so we still work on it. I don't try to convince myself right now that she isn't afraid somewhere deep inside that it may happen again, and I can't blame her, but all I can do is reassure her every day. And
How long ago has it been since you've come back?
I came back June 19th of 2014, so it's been coming up
almost a year. So your daughter's now 12. How's she doing since you've come back?
She actually just turned 13 on the 12th of this month. She's doing great. And we've kind of tiptoed around the topic with her. But the other day we actually sat down and just opened the floor for any questions that she had. And that was, that was a heartbreaking moment.
It was
to hear her side of it and how she felt, and to realize that I had not only put Tanya through that, but I guess in my mind I didn't want to believe that she was old enough to realize what was going on. And to hear the things that she said to me, it broke my heart. And it's still difficult to, even the things that Tanya and I have talked about, it's still difficult to talk about, because I am ashamed, but I know that with her there, we can get past this, and hopefully I can. I know I'll never get past the hurt just like she won't, but I'm hoping that I can get past the shame of what I allowed my mind to do, in a sense.
Benefit of those listening, because I think it'd be very powerful, Tanya, if Rick's feeling emotional about talking about this, I sense he is, because we're talking about daddy's little girl here, what type of things did she share with him that really was heartbreaking, that, what was going on in her head while all this was going on? Because I think that can be a very powerful motivation. You know, sometimes we won't do something for ourselves, but we will certainly do it for the ones we love. So if you're willing to share that, I hate to put you through that, reliving that pain, but it would be very beneficial if you could.
To be honest, the one thing that really, like, broke my heart was she said, and the way she said it about, she said, well, Daddy, she said, I just hope that you'll never leave me again. She said, I remember going to school, she's like, and I would go in the bathroom and I would cry because I was just wanting you to come home. And then when she said, you know, I love you, and I'm sorry, I'm just getting emotional.
It's hard for me to not be emotional listening to you also. I'm sorry.
But she said, please, Daddy, don't leave me. She said, I can't go through this again.
Oh. Wow. I bet that was hard to hear.
It was.
And I'll be the first. I'll be the first to admit that as much of denial that I was in and assuming that me not really being here wasn't, it still, and it doesn't help that this was just recently, but it still just completely tore me apart to hear her and know that she has been not saying anything until we asked her, and to know that she has carried this around almost a year now, for over a year, almost a year and a half, that she's been carrying this around, along with all of the other pressures that middle school kids go through. I don't want to say it motivated me in a positive way, but it was more of a reassurance to me that I was loved and it was where I was supposed to be. And as hurtful as it was to know what Tanya went through, to hear her say those, to hear her say those things, it still breaks my heart. And I know there's nothing I can do to fix that. I can only be appreciative and show them every day how much I love them and how much I appreciate them still supporting me after what I put them through.
Yeah, that's where God comes in. You know, he can help heal things, his grace and his mercy. You know, grace, for those of you who don't remember, grace is getting stuff, good stuff that you don't deserve. And mercy is not getting bad stuff that you do deserve. And God is rich in mercy and grace. And it sounds like you've got a lot of mercy and grace in your heart from God and from your family, Rick.
And I do. All around.
Wow. I'm really touched and moved. That would certainly motivate me to be on my best behavior. But I know you love your family very, very much.
And actually, my and Tanya's 7 year anniversary will be in 4 days. This Saturday is going to be our anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
7 is a good number, too.
Yes, it is.
The number of perfection.
The one thing that we kind of wanted to stress is that when Tanya was doing her research, and like she said, she found out that there were groups for people that suffer with PTSD, and then there's groups for the caregivers, but we noticed that there, and we haven't, I'm not saying there's not any, but I haven't noticed an abundance of couples that have gone through the things that we have and were willing to step out, and it was not willing on our part. It wasn't like we took pride in sharing our story because I am still dealing with the shame. But like you said, as far as God stepping in, I really feel like it was God's calling, for as horrible as these things were, for us to go through these things so that we would be the ones to step out and say, we'll put a face and we will put and we'll put everything out there for a place for people that feel the same way to come and talk about it. And so that's why we created the group the way we did, so that people see two people talking about both sides and a perspective from both people.
Yeah. And don't forget, your daughter is very equipped as well to deal with other children who are going through that. Can you imagine how much easier it would have been if your daughter had someone to talk to who was going through the exact same thing, but was on the other side now, and to give her hope, you know, and to just hope and pray that everything will be fine, that, you know, your dad will get help and so on. Yeah, it takes sometimes bad stuff for good stuff to happen. I remember a verse in the Bible says, all things work for good to them that love him and are called according to his purpose. And you two are certainly called. I should say you three are certainly called. So tell us about your ministry and how you help others who are suffering with this disorder. How can someone get a hold of you? Tell us what you do and how you're helping people today.
We really started the page just kind of focusing on dealing with the PTSD side. And as our videos have gone up and the story has come out, we've had people flood in that reassured us we weren't alone, and we've kind of reassured them that they weren't alone. So we're on Facebook and YouTube at PTSD and TBI, Break the Silence, Breaking the Cycle. Mm-hmm. And we're also on Twitter at RTK2006. And we just want to reach out and be that support for, if nothing else, couples that are willing to work together and realize that something's wrong and are ready to take that step to working their relationship out through some of the hardest things that, you know, people would have thrown in the towel over one thing that we've gone through. And we want people to be able to realize that you can make it through
the darkest of dark places
a lot more.
Yeah.
Divorce does not have to be like it is these days.
Right.
Wow, what a message of hope. So, again, if somebody wanted to visit you on Facebook, what would they type in? Now, in Facebook, you put in spaces. It's not like a website where there's no spaces, right? So what would they type in to search for your name on Facebook?
You would just type in capital letters, PTSD, space, the and sign, capital TBI, and then space.
TBI, what does that stand for?
That stands for traumatic brain injury.
Okay.
Most of that deals with the veterans that are exposed to explosions and bombs and things of that nature, but people that are in accidents can have it as well, and it can have kind of the same mental effects on people. But it's
so
PTSD.
Is that the whole thing they type in, or there's more?
It's PTSD and TBI, Break the Silence, Breaking the Cycle.
Okay. So put spaces between the words and the and sign.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, that's cool. Well, is there anything else in the final minutes that you would like to share as a take-home to those who are listening, just as a reminder or something you forgot to mention or something you want to reiterate?
The one thing that I just really want to hit on to the sufferer, to the ones that's battling PTSD, or TBI, or depression, or anxiety, any of its underlying issues, is that I hate the word disorder because it makes you feel like something's wrong with you. It's really, the word disorder is just a state of confusion. And I want people to realize that it takes a stronger person to step out and admit they have a problem rather than hide behind it.
Sure.
And your spouse is there to love you through sickness and in health, you should be able to go to them, and they will love you through it. Tony.
And what I would like to say is, if you know someone that is battling with PTSD, or they know someone that's battling with PTSD, don't be afraid to seek out and get them help. They don't let them suffer silently like Rick did for 7 years. Get them the help that they need. And just remember, you're not alone.
Now, what if we have somebody out there suffering from this, Rick and Tanya, that let's say their family was not as understanding and forgiving and empathetic as yours was, that the wife has left him and the family is written off. Let's say he's all alone and he doesn't have the family support. What would you say to that person? How can he still make it without his family?
Get onto a support group. Get on and talk to people that have experienced it. One of my biggest things was I did not go through properly with my, you know, my doctor's appointments with mental health. Mm-hmm. Personally, I felt that I went to the appointments, but I just kind of showed up, and I don't. Now I go and I go through my appointments. But in the past, I didn't want to hear from somebody that had read about this in a book. I wanted to talk to somebody that had actually experienced it and lived it and knew what it felt like, because
sure.
There's so many things you read about and not fully understand. Sometimes you just need to talk to somebody that knows what you're going through, even if it's just to vent.
Well, Rick and Tanya, I can't remember the last time I had such a moving interview. It's amazing, and this interview is going to help a lot of people. I encourage you to post it all over your social media to get your audience to listen and encourage people, because everybody knows somebody going through this, I'm sure. Everybody knows somebody in the military. Share it with someone who you think needs to hear it. And just want to thank you again for allowing me to interview you guys. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday at noon live. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so that you can listen to the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. They're also on our website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, and the shortcut link, DaveNass.com, Nancy Apple, Sam, as well as iTunes. You would just type in DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. It's all on our website. So, by the way, when you are on my website, don't forget to take that quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? So that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And you will be encouraged and uplifted by doing that. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye. Rick and Tanya, thanks again. Have a wonderful week, you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.